If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this episode of Mind Pump, the world's top fitness, health, and entertainment podcast, we answer fitness and health questions that are asked by listeners and viewers just like you. So here's what we do in this episode. We open up with an introductory portion. This is where we talk about studies. We mention our sponsors. We talk about current events. Generally, you just have a lot of fun. That took about 45 minutes in this episode. After that, we answered the fitness and nutrition and health questions. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a breakdown of the whole episode. So if you want to fast forward, rewind, whatever, find your favorite spot, you can do that. So we open up by talking about a new company we're working with, Public Goods. Now, Public Goods provides some of the best sustainable products you can buy anywhere. Good for the environment, good for your skin, good for your clothes. You can buy soaps, you can buy detergents.
Every household item you can think of.
They have organic feminine products. They're very inexpensive. They have this model where you could buy certain products and then you only have to buy refills, so there's less packaging waste. This also saves you money. In fact, Adam was talking about how you could buy razors on there for $1 each made with bamboo handles. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But we just started working with this company and we have a crazy hookup. In fact, we had to double check this to make sure that it was accurate. So here's what you get when you sign up with the Mind Pump hookup. You're going to get $15 off your first order with no minimum purchase. In other words, you could sign up, get $15 worth of free stuff, literally the first time, never have to do anything again.
Say here, what?
Here's what you do. Go to publicgoods.com/mindpump and then use the code mindpump at checkout. Then we talked about the gig economy. We have some family members that are taking advantage of the current situation, making some money because a lot of people are door dashing right now. Then we talked about the camaraderie in gyms, some of the best you'll find anywhere, no joke, especially the hardcore gyms. Then we talked about black market gyms. That led us to talk about why gyms are closing.
Ooh, speakeasy gyms.
And how a lot of gyms might be opening up anyway. Sorry, Gavin Newsom. Then we talked about one of our favorite post-workout meals. No, it's not a protein shake. It's cereal. It's the cereal. It's like the cereal you had when you were a kid. Mm. Tastes amazing. They actually have a flavor that's blueberry. Another one, birthday cake. The company, Magic Spoon. Now, this cereal is made with whey protein and milk protein, has no sugar, still delicious. It's amazing. Here's your hookup. Go to magicspoon.com/mindpump. You'll get an automatic Mind Pump discount, or you could just use the code mindpump. Then we talked about, then we talked about Adam's coin percentage correction. He messed up again. No big deal. Justin brought up a Japanese company that is allowing fans to cheer for their favorite teams from home. That might be something that goes big.
You suck.
I talked about cannabinoid research. There's some breakthroughs in cannabinoid science. These are the molecules found in the marijuana plant. We talked about the hypothalamus in women who take birth control. Apparently, scientists are finding that chronic use of birth control or consistent use shrinks the hypothalamus. Then we talked about a company who gets lost luggage and sells it, and apparently they're the only company in the world that does this. I talked about my gun scare at the airport when I was 12 years old. Justin brought up sunflower selfies. And then we got into the fitness questions. Mm. Here's the first one. This person says, look, I'm not good at pull-ups. What can I do? The next question.
Pull-ups.
This person is bored with bicep training. Weird, I know. Bicep training's fun, whatever. But they want to know what they can do because it's so boring. So we give some other bicep exercises that might be more fun. The third question, this person wants to know how to use resistance bands appropriately for best results. Resistance bands can seriously augment your workout for good results. So you might want to listen to that part of the episode. And the final question, this person says, what are the best things I can do to build bone strength and health? Also, this month, all month long, MAPS Strong is 50% off. Now, MAPS Strong is a workout program that is inspired by strongmen. It is designed to build muscle, speed up the metabolism, and help people also to burn body fat. It's a very popular program among people who want to develop their posterior chain, their back, their butt, and their hamstrings. Also, if you like workouts that have both traditional and non-traditional exercises. You're going to love this program. There's a lot of new stuff in it. Anyhow, here's how you get the half off. Go to mapsstrong.com. That's M-A-P-S-S-T-R-O-N-G.com. And use the code STRONG50. That's STRONG50. No space for the discount.
Super excited, right? Always get excited when find a new company.
Yeah, I can tell you're excited.
Does that not sound
like really, looking at you?
Does that not sound super excited? No. I am super duper excited.
So tended out right now?
No.
Whoa,
I feel like that we've had a need for a couple years now, at least a year and a half, 2 years now, for a brand that supplies things like this. And so this was something that I believe Rachel came across them first, maybe about 6 months ago, reached out. We were back and forth with the company and a bunch of phone calls and then talking about things and just like we normally do, courting somebody. And finally sealed everything last month and officially launching today our partnership with Public Goods.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, we're old school. We don't date, we court.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Their company's crushing and they're going to keep crushing. You know what I like about what they do? So they really, really do emphasize eco-friendly, not harsh chemicals type products. And one of the things I like to do is you'll buy a product. That'll be the container for the product. Then you just buy refill bags.
Right.
Yeah. So it's less waste for the environment. And the prices, I think because of that, are really low because the expensive packaging is what you get when you get the initial product or whatever. Everything else is refill. I really like that model.
It's super simplistic. Mm-hmm. And even when the branding, you can kind of see that. I just love, and they have so many different options for things in the kitchen and cleaning products and things like that. Like just going and overhauling my entire kitchen with spices and all that, I'm definitely going to hit that up.
Yeah. Didn't you say that their razors were really good?
Their razor blades are a dollar, dude.
Yeah.
So Dollar Shave Club, too, by the way, isn't a dollar. So not a lot of people know that or not, right?
It's like 15 bucks or something.
Yeah, yeah. Which what? Still.
Whoa, that's a big difference.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I
was doing that before.
Yeah. Hold on a second.
You didn't know that?
No, wait. It says Dollar Shave Club. It's $15?
Once you start getting the actual razor you want.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, wow. It starts going up in price.
And then I think that actually, I think the base model is like $7 for like the little handle and then the blade actually plays worth that.
Yeah.
So
these ones were Public Goods were like bamboo handle and the whole deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah. No. So I'm excited. I just ordered a dad's kit, which comes with all this, like all the bathroom accessories and in there is the razor. So I'm really excited to try that because that alone for me. I mean, dude, you know how much replacement blades are? I don't know if you guys use. Do you guys use a razor?
I don't use a razor anymore.
You use a electric?
Yeah, I just if I'll trim the beard every once in a while, but
like Norelco, like old school.
No. Just keep it like a beard.
Oh, you know what I mean? Like with the
scissors. Yeah, I shaved a couple times with the razor, and Jessica was like, "Don't."
Don't
yeah, let's
do
not
that
do
again.
That anymore.
You you razor, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I razor
especially
too.
Especially my neck. Yeah.
I have to do it. You don't have to, you don't line up like that? No.
No. I mean, I'll do it down here, but Justin's beard connects to his chest hair. So he has to
you gotta go down the path
he's
of
gonna mow the lawn. He's gonna mow the lawn.
He has to make it. He has to separate
Reynolds over here.
It's the trail to ecstasy.
Are you the hairiest of all of us?
I know.
No, dude, I got no hair.
You're the hairiest of all of us though.
No way. That's not factual.
You don't think so?
Not at all.
I thought you were.
My arm hair is very misleading, dude.
I'm not the hairiest.
Doug definitely Doug's like smoother than a baby's ass.
Yeah, yeah. Doug's like he's like a seal.
He's like a hairless chimp.
He's like that's what he's say. Like a dolphin.
It's
just smooth.
Smooth. Hey, more like that. How about the Public Goods almonds, bro? So
yeah, those are good. Dude.
I loved you, skinny dipped.
Yeah,
you were
fun.
Yeah, you were fun. Yeah, you were fun. You were cute.
But this new girl.
You were cute. Yeah.
She's tasty.
These are on another level.
They're way hotter.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is on another level right here,
dude. You know what? Here's another thing too to pay attention to. I talked about this once on the podcast. This is something I was not aware of. Feminine products, right? Like tampons and pads and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They're not regulated the same way as like food products, obviously, because you don't eat them. However, you do put them inside your body.
Right.
And they do contain the like the cotton and the stuff that makes up these products are often soaked in chemicals.
Like Jolene Brighton talks about this all the time.
She does. And when you put something inside your body, you still do absorb some of the chemicals and stuff in there. And the public goods, they have the organic products, organic feminine hygiene products.
I know, it's awesome. You know, one of the things that I had to get clear, when we were going back and we were first negotiating the deal, the offer that they make for our listeners, I had to like go back like three different times and make this clear. So wait a second, you mean to tell me that basically they can order something for free? Like, and there's no bells, whistles, that doesn't tie them
in? Wait, what do you mean?
So they have, what is it, up to $15, Doug, is what they can spend?
Yes.
So they get a $15 voucher, basically, towards any of the products, and you could technically buy something for $15.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, and you can go on there.
So you could sign up,
get
$15 worth of free stuff.
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And try the product or try something that you
this
want.
It's like an initial offering to get you in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you required to buy anything else after?
No. That's why it's kind of
a no-brainer.
I want to talk to their marketing department. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You guys sure have seen it?
Well, I mean,
here
that just,
it comes.
You've got to be pretty confident in
what
you're
is.
Delivering.
That's
if,
what it is.
If you know, because then you know the leads are worth it, right? That just that if they can get everybody in, they know a large enough percentage of these people will love the product and continue buying.
I think because of the current state of the way things are going anyway, I think companies like this are positioned so well because going to the store right now is a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Places are still, are we open? Are we shut down? What's going on? Whatever. It's obviously delivered to your door. It's clean.
And it's all the common household items you need. So, you know, it'd be much more convenient to do it this way.
Yeah. You know, we did one of those, what is it called when you, that shopping cart thing that you go online, order your groceries?
Instacart.
Okay. We've done it now several times. We have yet to get exactly what we ordered.
Oh, really?
Never.
Comes all random?
Never. Will be like organic berries.
Yeah, because if
they'll,
it's out.
They'll cucumber.
Oh, really? So
if like it's way different.
If it's out, then they won't Oops. Have it.
Right? Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
No. It's like, I want this, not whatever you think I want.
It's not supposed to work that way.
Oh, this is
we don't have this. I'll give you one of these.
Yeah. Oh, he wants
an eggplant.
It's still a vegetable. You know what I mean? Let's just give you.
Right.
Oh, there are no eggs. Here's a chicken that makes it.
Well,
egg.
You know what happened to Katrina yesterday?
It's
that
like the mystery
so
box.
We used Instacart like on the daily, like literally. So yesterday, this is the day before yesterday. She ordered and she put banana right on like her fruit that she on the list and they like literally brought one banana, you know,
just one.
Yeah, because you like it's like fuck, you got
to say bananas.
Yeah,
not a bunch of bananas.
Yeah, because she because you send over a list like that, right? And when you send the list over, she just real quick she's writing it all out banana, right? And because she didn't put bananas, right, or a bundle of bananas.
Wow, like you gotta be real specific.
We get our order and there's like one banana.
Eggs.
Yeah.
That's two.
Yeah.
You just said eggs. You need to say
multiple eggs. How much is one banana?
I don't know what we paid for. I don't remember.
It's like 50 cents?
So my brother my little brother who just moved back from living out in Hawaii.
Oh yeah, how was that for him, by the way?
Not so great.
Was he living on the beach or something?
No, he was living out of a like one of them Volkswagen type vans for a minute there, dude.
Wow.
My brother and I couldn't be further from different. Like when it comes
that's
to
like
things
the surfer life.
Yeah, because you would live in a Chevy, not a Volkswagen.
Stupid. No, he did that. Like he lived in Colorado, like tent life for a while. He did. He lived up in Truckee, Tahoe area for a while. Like, so he's like, a nomad, right? Like he's just wherever type of deal and he's young. So, and he's not married, doesn't have kids. And so I encourage it. I always tell him, I say, hey man, I went the other route. So I'm not saying my way was better. Mm-hmm. I tied myself to a mortgage by the time I was 21. Mm. You know what I'm saying? I ain't going nowhere after that shit. So, you know, I used to be a little envious of my two little brothers who have this kind of a personality where they're just, travelers and they don't need much. And so I've been, I've always encouraged that for him. Hey, dude, do it now while you're young, when you can. Mm. But he's now kind of reaching that age, right? He's getting closer to 30.
Mm.
And he's like, I really need to get my shit together and like find something to do. And he's been asking me about coming out to the Bay Area. And I said, yeah, dude, I mean, obviously there's a lot of opportunity. Now it's really expensive to get started here. And I suggested, I said, what's cool about being out here and you can come visit me and do this and set your own schedule is, sign up for Instacart, DoorDash, Uber, all those things, and, hustle. And then if you can find, I think in a perfect world, I just saw Home Depot was offering jobs. I was like, if you get like a little steady 25 to 30 hours at Home Depot where you have like a set schedule like in the morning or something. And then when you want to get crazy and hustle, you hustle Instacart mm-hmm. and DoorDash. So he's been doing this for like the last 2 weeks. And dude, you can make some fucking money mm-hmm. doing DoorDash, dude.
I mean, really? Especially right now.
That's great.
Bro, he's been screenshotting me like what he's making. And he's like, bro, I've made more in the last 5 days than I would a 2 week paycheck working at the hardware store that I was working before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and it's all, you know, it is at his convenience. Like he wants to work late night. He works late night. He wants to work through the day. He works through the day. He wants to sleep in and then start late. He can do it. Do whatever. It's such a cool time.
It is, but you know,
that type of stuff.
The gig economy itself is a really cool option.
Yeah, I wish that existed when I was a kid.
Yeah, but you know that
16.
You know those jobs are being threatened right now, though, right? Because they passed the laws that said that they can't be contractors or whatever. And
yeah, thanks for looking out for us, government.
Yeah,
appreciate all of your efforts so far.
So that's only Uber though, right? It's not all of them. It's not DoorDash and.
I think they're all going to be threatened by it and have to figure out ways to maintain, you know, continue doing what they're doing.
Really?
Yeah, because I know that I don't remember exactly what it was.
Look that up, Doug. I want to hear about that. That's a bunch of bullshit. I heard that. I remember
it's stupid because there's so many people who benefit from the flexibility.
You know what's funny? It's always the wrong people who have no fucking clue that are like voting for that or rooting for that. They think like it's going to it's like the same people that I feel like that like root for minimum wage to go up, but don't actually understand economics and like what that actually really does. Like, we should move minimum wage up to $25 or $40. What about everybody else who can't make that kind of money or people that employ people that can't pay someone that money, actually does?
Usually what it is they just, you don't have the skills or the experience where someone's going to want to pay you that much, so you just become unemployable at that point. Yeah, no, the gig economy is interesting. That's actually one of the reasons why it's the biggest job growth has come from companies like that. And I know a lot of people who do those types of jobs on the side, and they love the flexibility of being able to do whatever they do.
Well, think about this. I mean, I told you how much he's making good money, right? He made a couple $1,000s this week. And I'm like,
wow, that's great.
I know. I'm like, that's big money, dude. I mean, that was 7 days of working straight, right? So that was a lot. He was grinding.
Yeah, but that's his choice.
Right,
you know, how many jobs can you go to and say, hey, I want to work every day so I can make this? And they'll say, sorry.
Yeah.
We can't do that.
And I mean, if he wants to work, here's me. So I was, and I think you guys were both this way. I know you, Sal, said this. We shared this, that we were, when I got into 24, one of the things, that I guess this dates us too, right? This is like before a lot of time and labor laws. They told me like, they said, you could work as much as you want.
Because your salary?
You know, because you were still hourly, but they didn't have time and labor laws back then. This was that's how far back we go.
Yeah.
And they told me as a trainer that, you know, hey, if you want to work the floor and hustle and find new clients and do all that. Now, it was a minimum wage. I was getting paid for that. And then I got paid a higher rate.
So funny.
But for me, I mean, minimum wage for me in the Bay Area was more than what I was making as a kid in high school. So I was like, wait, as much as I want to work?
Not only that, but you're building your business. You're trying to get
So to me, it was like, okay, you're going to pay me to try and go get...
And build my own business.
Yeah, build my company or build, you know, I'm working for them, but it's like building your own business.
I used to do that in the restaurant industry. Oh. I would just take people's shifts because everybody was always trying to get out of their shift and go do something or go to the ball game or whatever. I'm like, give me your shift. And so I would end up working like 2, 3, 4 shifts some days just because I'm like, dude, this is
my
money.
My very first deal, I made $800 right off of a single pop. I sold a personal training. It was the very first person I ever saw, and it was a girl at 5 a.m., a waitress I took, and it was because of a trainer. I was brand new. I was like, I'll take everything. Yeah, I'll work whenever.
I did the same thing.
That was me. And you know, all the veteran trainers thought they were being all clever and shit and being like, oh, hey, the new dumb guy will fucking work whenever.
Let's load him.
Let's give him all the garbage fucking leads, right? So he gives me a waitress. I think she was 19 years old, but hey, she was hustling and on her, and she wanted to fucking lose 15 pounds.
Yeah.
I took her through a fitness appointment, sold her a ton of training, and she was able to put at least half of it down and make payments on it, which we could do that back then. Mm-hmm. It was an $800 rip for me. And I had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to see her, and he gave it to me, and he comes into work at like 9 o'clock and he sees in the SMR, right?
So you've already got
that. I already got the sale. He was all pissed.
Well, I mean, you want to know what my schedule looked like when I first became a trainer? No, this is no joke. I would get in at 8 a.m. I would work with clients, most of them back to back. Oftentimes you'd have a block of time in between. This is when I'd work out. But I was there from 8 a.m. till about 8 p.m. I would go home. This is no joke. I would go home, eat dinner, go to bed, wake up, come back, train a client at 3 a.m. Remember, this was 24-hour Fitness. It was open 24 hours.
Yeah.
Then I'd train the client at 3 a.m., go back home, go back to bed sometimes, and then come back to work. And the reason why is because this person said, I want to buy training, but no trainers want to train me at 3 o'clock in the morning. Well, yeah. I'm a new trainer, so I'm like, let's do this.
Well, yeah, pay me.
I'll train you at any time you want to come in.
Yeah.
Let's do this. Now, here's the thing.
I took a few of those.
They ended up being very consistent clients.
Yeah.
After a while,
then you got to figure it out. You start trying to talk them out of it. Yeah. Like, hey, why don't we do that?
Well, that
you know, cortisol levels are highest at 3 a.m. Yeah. You might want to train when you're testosterone.
That's why my schedule ended up being that way. Is what you start to find out as a trainer is the people that get up that early and come to personal training, man, those are the most
they're
the most serious people. It's the clients.
You're actually right.
Yeah. Oh, they're. I mean, if you have the discipline to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to get your workout in, and you're going to pay someone like. Those people ain't missing. I rarely ever had somebody flake on me early in the morning.
No.
It was always post.
No, there's an interesting culture in the gym. You know, when you run gyms, you can see trends once you've been there for long enough or whatever. The most consistent members, the ones you can count on, they're going to show up, the same crowd all the time, early morning.
Yep.
Early morning, 5, 6 a.m., it's the same people in the gym working out. They're the most consistent. They're never going to stop. Those after work hours, those after work primetime hours, that's where you get the huge.
It gets a little flaky.
Yeah, where they, you know, here's another part of the culture. It's funny. I was walking with Jessica this morning. We did a morning walk. And as we're walking, this guy comes out, big dude, and he's washing his truck. And he looks at me and, you know, I say hi to him and whatever. And he goes, oh, man, he goes, you got a gym in your garage, don't you? Like, yeah, I do. And he goes, man, it sucks. He goes, they opened the gyms for one day. Yeah. Then they closed them. He goes, I went to go lift weights. Now they're closed. He goes, this totally sucks. He's like, I'm going to try and put a gym in my garage. So we start talking. Big dude, right? Start talking back and forth. And then we leave. Real nice guy. And I told Jessica, I said, you know, that it's funny. There's this camaraderie between people who work out in the gym that supersedes all other differences. I've noticed this in every gym I've ever worked out in or worked in, especially the hardcore gyms. The more hardcore the gym, the more everybody treats each other with respect and kindness, and it doesn't matter.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that. There's one thing for sure, okay? No matter what color, what language you speak, what age you are, that we all have in common. You're somewhat growth-minded.
Yeah.
You care about bettering yourself,
and you're
so you. All other things could be different, but you there's at least that's a guarantee. Because if you're making the effort to go to a gym and lift things up and run on treadmills and do things like that, that there's
it's admirable.
Yeah, there's
you know, you respect it.
You are doing it with the intentions of bettering who you are.
That's right. So here's the thing. I've had people ask me this question: are people who are growth minded drawn to working out? Or does exercise help grow and shape a growth-minded person?
Chicken or egg.
I think it's both. I think there's a little bit of both, but I think a large part of, and I've only because I've experienced this training lots of people, when you do it for a long time and you do it for the right reasons, it does build the skill of discipline and it does change your perception of how much power and control you have over yourself and your attitude and stuff like that. So you're right. It's a lot of growth-minded people. And it's also a lot of people willing to work to improve themselves. I remember as a kid, I was the first time I really worked out in a gym, I was 15 or 16. I want to say 16. And then when I turned 17, I had my driver's license, and I actually there was a world gym that was far away. It was like 40 minutes away. But it's World Gym, and the only gym I was going to at the time was 24 Hour Fitness. I'm like, I want to go to a hardcore gym to see what it's all about. Mm-hmm. So I drove all the way to this World Gym that was like, it was like power lifters.
Did Dave Draper own it?
No, I think that's the one in Santa Cruz.
He owned.
Yeah, so this was like bodybuilders and power lifters, and like it was a dungeon of weights. And I remember going in there, and I'm very comfortable in gyms, even at that age, but I was still a little intimidated because there were all these monsters working out or whatever. And I remember how like cool they were to me. You know, if I was looking at a machine, hey, do you want me to show you to use that? Or do you need a spot? Or, hey, good job, people giving me fist bumps in the gym. I saw a lady working out in there. They were treating her the same way. That was my first experience with the camaraderie that you experience in gyms. And I would communicate this to clients, especially female clients who are intimidated by the gym. And I remember telling them, the big scary people in the gym, the guys and girls who look super hardcore, they're the ones most willing to help you and answer questions.
Biggest teddy bears. Exactly.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I know they're screaming over there with the and they're dropping the 120-pound dumbbells and whatever, but trust me, if you have a question and you ask them, they'll spend the time.
I think of it as, and there's always exceptions to the rule, right? I think of that like, it reminds me of like some of the baddest dudes that you meet that are, and girls too, that are fighters. Yeah. Like if you're a really, really badass.
So true.
You're normally the most docile, nice going person. You know why? Because you're confident.
Yeah. They don't need to prove anything.
Yeah. And when you're the buffest dude in the gym, you ain't got shit to prove. Yeah. It's pretty obvious. But
it's, you know what?
It's working.
You know what though? With fighters, it's not just the confidence. It's also that they know, you know, the damage that can happen in a fight. They respect it.
Yeah, there's other factors.
I've hung out with some fighters and I remember going out and them getting insulted or pushed or whatever, and they're just like,
but I think
cool, and I'm like, man, he could wipe the floor with you.
It's humility, right? Yeah. They have that in common. That's what it is. They're both humble for whatever reasons. It's just, you know, if you're someone in the gym and you've reached the biggest, buffest person in there, that didn't happen overnight. You know, and you can relate and remember what it was probably like first starting and frustrated and working hard and knowing you have a long road ahead of you. And so I think you have compassion.
Hey,
for
man, what got me in love with, I was already in love with working out, but what got me in love with the main lifts, or at least the first time I was really introduced to them as being the most effective and experiencing them, was a group of powerlifters, older gentlemen who saw me doing leg press and, you know, leg extensions and saw how hard I was working, and they helped me out. And I could see that they looked at this. And I would feel the same way now. If I'm working out and I see some 16-year-old kid over there just grinding and trying hard, I'm going to look at the kid the same way they looked at me and be like, man, good for you. Here, let me point you in the right direction. You're wasting your time on this leg extension machine.
Totally.
Why don't you try barbell squatting? Watch
did
what
you,
happens.
Did any, I don't think any of us went back to a gym. It was a small window there that they were opened up. Do you guys know anybody that did?
No. I stopped by the Santa Cruz Power and kind of peeped in because my friend was trying to work out there. And then that was it, though. I mean, they had a few people in there at the time, but it was definitely a different
You got to find out for me because I heard they're staying open.
Dude.
Because today, everyone's supposed to be closed.
I hope they are. I mean, I'm not going to put them on blast.
Yeah,
or
don't call them out like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but like,
yeah, right, just put them on Front Street.
You know, like, that's the thing. Sorry. Like, again, we'll see what happens with this whole thing. Here, like, how many people are still going to try and make it work?
Here's what I think is about to happen because it's been too long now. I think what's about to happen, not that I'm encouraging this, but this is, you're going to start to see mass civil disobedience with people who are going to say, I'm sorry, I got to keep my business open, and I got to at least try to make a living because it's been too long.
Yeah.
And when enough people start doing, you know what it reminds me of?
This is a grand experiment.
It just reminds me of the Prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
Prohibition. One of the reasons why that got repealed was
because you remember that so well.
No. It reminds me of
Prohibition times. Yeah. I remember.
Yeah. Well, that's Doug when he was in his 20s back then. What was that like? No, it reminds when I read about Prohibition, because when that happened, so many people did not follow that law. You had police officers going into these speakeasies, you had so many that they basically are like, we've made a bunch of normal people lawbreakers. And with these, forced shutdowns with a lot of these businesses again in California, I can only imagine how many of them are
speakeasy
doing
gyms.
Stuff.
How cool is that? What if you got that where it's like you got to go down a basement and like you don't even know it's there?
Yeah, not saying that this is a good idea.
Not
but let's just,
promoting it.
Well, let's just say I'm you had a secret it, handshake.
Whatever. Yeah, exactly.
A secret knock.
It's a fact. It's happening. I mean, we were off air. We were speculating, right, about this. Like, and where my brain goes is I'm trying to think of like, where's the opportunity, right? There's going to be an opportunity that's going to present itself for business because this is it's already happening, what you're saying. It's not like it's going to happen. It's already been happening. It's just going to ramp up.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's already people doing, haircuts undercover. There's already trainers still going to people's houses and training. Mm-hmm. This is happening already. And if you keep things closed up for much longer, it's going to become survival mode. I mean, even the most responsible person that has got 3-6 months of income put aside, that's running low now. And you put those people in that corner long enough, and there's still a demand for it from the market, people are going to figure out. Now, what I'm concerned about is, okay, now you do that. If it's black market, just like Prohibition times, it's cash. and you're not claiming it for taxes. So what does that do for the economy when we start, when all these people do start working but stop paying taxes?
No, well, big tax shortfall. Yeah. Well, here's what they do. The
economy's not that great to begin with.
They'll still tax you. They'll just do it differently. They'll just print more money.
Yeah.
So then you are getting taxed without getting taxed. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you're still going to get taxed that way. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Speaking of working out, I got a DM from someone the other day. I didn't even think about this. So we, you know, we work with a company, Magic Spoon, right? High protein cereal, no sugar. And this guy sends me this picture, and he's like, best post-workout meal of all time.
You know, that's so funny. I was thinking about that because the whole slamming a shake after the workout is a post-workout meal. I'm like, what's the difference in the macros? I was thinking about that too, is like adding that instead.
It's whey protein and milk protein isolate, so it's high quality. There's very little sugar. You put milk in there. You get a little bit of the sugar from the milk. Milk itself is actually a very good
post-workout. Well, I was just going to say, so there. Yeah. Remember when there was, wasn't there a study that went around?
There was the chocolate milk, yes.
Yes, I did a post a long time ago. I want to say like 4 years ago. It's deep in my Instagram, where I compared post-workout shakes to like a glass of chocolate milk.
Yep, and they've done studies on this to show in terms of replenishing glycogen and muscle protein synthesis, and milk was excellent.
Right. Yeah. So imagine milk in Magic Spoon is like the ideal post-workout.
Plus it's convenient, right? Because it's in a box, so you just boop, get your bowl and
it's smash, way tastier. Yeah.
Smash some fruity cereal that's got protein in it.
Now you still haven't had the peanut butter yet. Have you?
So
neither one of you guys have had it
yet. No.
So you know what Magic Spoon is doing right
I'm
now too.
Order it next.
So I think Jackie messaged me. So they said, "Yeah, the Magic Spoon listening to their fans, so you can now create your variety box."
Oh yeah.
Okay.
So before that was kind of a knock that I had. It wasn't something I shared on the podcast, but it was something that I was like, "Damn, man, sometimes I wish I could just I want this flavor and this flavor and that's all I want." Uh-huh. And like even when I ordered peanut butter, I got honey nut also. So I got two peanut butter, two honey nut. And I'm like, the honey nut ones are they're good. They remind me of like do you remember what was it called? Corn Pops. That flavor.
I love Pops.
Yeah, if you like that flavor, then you like it.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Huh. That was
my favorite.
I didn't like that cereal.
You don't like Pops?
No, I wasn't a fan of that.
Oh, I love Pops.
So you'll like that cereal then, because it reminds me of that flavor. It has that flavor to it.
Huh.
Even though it's honey nut, it tastes like, it reminds me of like Corn Pops.
Oh, dude, I was all about Pops and Smacks, Honey Smacks.
Smacks are very similar
with
to
the
that.
Frog on it.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
You know why else I like Smacks? This is why. I'm the oldest of four. You know how great it is early in the morning to wake up and ask your younger siblings if they'd like some Smacks? You know, just, and they say yes. You know?
Even back then, you're into dad jokes.
Even
as a kid,
it was the greatest thing of all time. Hey, you want some? You know, my brother's all tired. Yeah, he's all tired in the morning. His hair's all disheveled. Yeah, I'll have some Smacks.
What's the capital of Thailand?
Oh, hey, speaking of DMs, I have to clear up. I love our listeners. I do, especially when you check me.
I know you're about to say something.
Did you do something wrong? Oh, like, I always do. Are you kidding me? Like, you know, shit flies out my mouth and then somebody has to correct me.
I just dodge it. I go,
So Justin and I were talking about, remember when we were talking about the coin shortage and I was talking about I have a 5 gallon and you said, do you guys use the thing? And I'm like, fuck no, they take too much money.
Oh, the fee that they charge to put in those machines.
Yeah, I've used that at the grocery store.
Yeah, I offended somebody who has one of those machines.
You said it was 30%. What is the percentage?
It's like 7%.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So it was way
that's
off.
That's a big difference.
That's pretty What kind of coin machine were you using?
Man, you got highway robbed.
I was getting jacked. Yeah. I don't remember what it was.
Adam got closed by somebody. They're like, no. Listen, that machine charges 30%. Yeah. I'll charge you 25%.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Adam's like, okay.
Yeah, great deal.
Good.
I got suckered.
Thank you so much.
I got suckered.
Dude, so Justin, the BMX bike, right, gave it to my boy.
Oh, you already gave it to him?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you think?
Liked it. Loved it, right?
Sweet.
So I bring it home, and he's all excited, right? And he already bailed, which is pretty funny.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's already fell off of it, and he was okay. But I'm laughing. I'm like, that's the first of many. So just get used to it.
Oh yeah, that's part of it.
But I got on that thing, and guess who can still bunny hop?
No way. Yeah.
Now it's like 3 inches.
Old skills.
You know what I mean? It's that much.
What I would pay to have a video of that.
Why didn't you send
a video of it?
You do.
I do.
Okay,
that would be excellent if you shared that.
It was the tiniest of bunny hops, but I got the back tire off and I remembered how to do it.
If you can't get up onto the curve, it doesn't count.
Yeah, I could do it. I think if I practice.
I'm going to bring the ramp in. I want to see your skills, bro.
No. Yeah, I'm not going to jump a ramp.
What? That's not that crazy.
Oh, man. I got old man bones. I'm going to crack.
Hey, you know, another thing that someone DM'd me about that we talked about. So we were talking about the UFC fight, and the fans and how I told you just like it killed the excitement.
Oh, because there were no fans?
Yeah, there's no. Yeah. So I guess soccer is already doing that, like the laugh track version.
I read about this. So basically the Japanese company, what is it, Yamaha? Or not Yamaha.
Motorcycles?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a Japanese company that basically created an app so you can the fans could introduce noises and stuff like through speakers in empty stadiums.
Well, wasn't it you who brought up the company that was trying to start where you could do a virtual version of it?
Yes,
you could pay
the
tickets?
Cutouts.
Yeah, is it the same company or is it a different company?
I think that's a different company. That's a different idea.
Oh, so when you're watching the game, then you hear all these speakers of fans that are digitally screaming.
So it is Yamaha. I'm not smoking.
Wow.
Crack. Yeah.
You're good job.
Remote Sweet. Cheer app lets fans root for their teams. Okay, so is it cost money? Is it like $1 and you get to be in there or something? How does it
work?
Well,
yeah, they're testing it right now, but I'm sure they're gonna have an app for it, so you pay for each time that you're gonna put your noise out there.
Please tell me this is not okay. This is like, remember we talked like 2 years ago. Or maybe longer, about how I really think that like we're moving in the direction of the movie Surrogates. Do you remember that?
Oh,
how the virtual world of everything, and like people just love being plugged in more because it's virtual worlds better, you know? Right. Tell me this is not a step in that direction where like we can start making cutouts of ourselves, virtual versions of ourselves at the events. You can impose your voice in it, and like you don't even go. You know what I'm saying? But you're there virtually. And then you have, remember the IG thing I told you about with the clothes that you could pretend that you have on? Like, we are getting closer and closer every day.
Well, it makes sense right now, but like, I think it's just a massive pivot just to try and gather any money they can.
Well, you say that until people think it's cool.
Well, think about it this way. Like, you've seen the comments of anonymous people on YouTube, like just disgusting, terrible people. I wonder if this is going to allow people. Thanks.
I wonder if
people are going to, because they're doing it through an app and it's anonymous, what kind of cheers are they going to start saying?
Exactly. It starts getting all like weird and like horrible and racist.
Fuck you.
Well, here, so to a follow up to the whole cutout thing, they actually caught somebody that had like Osama bin Laden. They put like in the stands and like all these like characters in history that were evil. Like they're putting them all over in there and planting it in there.
Of course.
So they're like, oh, we got to screen this.
That's
better.
Exactly what's going to happen.
Duh.
Yeah, but that'll make it funny though. Don't you think that'll be funny?
I mean, I do.
Some point, though, you're going to be like, come on, man. You're watching a game and the whole crowd is chanting, you know, suck my dick or something like that. You know? Yeah. Like, what the hell's going
on?
It's going
to happen, Sal.
Dude, Adam, yeah. Adam, I wanted to tell you something. So,
tell me, Sal.
Cannabis science coming out. I'm going to read it for you. So scientists have identified a cannabinoid that they're now synthesizing and stabilizing. There's a process where they stabilize it. And it's going to be far more potent.
Sweetly.
It's going to be far more potent than traditional cannabinoids found in cannabis.
Oh my God.
For diseases like cancer, to help people with chemotherapy, irritable bowel disease, and psoriasis.
What?
Yeah, because they're finding that cannabinoids may have some positive effects for psoriasis, but really only at high doses. But this particular version, you don't need to take super high doses and it'll be a medicine.
Huh.
So years ago, you know, it's funny. Years ago, I did so much obsessive research on cannabinoids because I had a family member who had cancer and they were terminal. There was nothing that, you know, traditional medicine could do. So I researched all these alternative treatments and I stumbled upon a study that was done in Spain with mice in cancer, and they found that THC killed cancer at really, really high doses. So I went down this path of studying cannabinoids, invested in companies that were making medicines based on cannabinoids because I knew the potential. This is exactly what I predicted, that they would – I didn't think that the natural cannabinoids would be powerful enough to be used for acute conditions. Mm. I know that cannabinoids are good for like long-term chronic issues for some people, but for like – cancer and, you know, other types of diseases, you probably need super high concentrated doses or synthetic versions that are more targeted. And I thought, man, I bet you in the future they're gonna start figuring it's a whole new class of drugs.
So they made
that's
breakthroughs with the synthetic version. Huh?
That's what they're talking about.
Who's right the company now that's doing it?
I'll pull it up for you. I believe it's a. Let me see. I think it's an Israeli company. If I'm not mistaken, you know, they're the leaders right now in cannabis research. Hmm. Yeah, Dr. Raphael McCullum, and I don't know where he's from, doesn't say. I'm going to find out where. Oh, it's a global biotech company based in the U.S. EPM. Interesting.
We should look, based here.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe so. We should look this up.
Yeah,
and
no.
See what's going on.
No, that's interesting.
Very interesting. Really Here's some more interesting science. So they did some studies on birth control pills, and they found that women who take oral contraceptives had significantly smaller hypothalamus volume, the part of the brain called the hypothalamus, and women who took oral contraceptives was much smaller, and they believe that this can lead to more depressive and anger symptoms.
Hmm.
So it definitely affects the structure.
More Jolene Brighton information.
In the brain, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting stuff. But of course, it makes sense, right? The hypothalamus controls certain hormones. So if you're taking a hormone from the outside, then, you know, it should definitely have that, what's that called? Negative feedback loop or whatever.
Right. I got some for you that has nothing to do with science that I thought was really interesting to me. Did you know that there is a single person, a single company who has monopolized all the luggage that we lose and has turned it into a massive business?
What?
Since, like, I want to say...
What do you mean a single
course?
Yeah, okay. So, first of all, airlines lose collectively billions of dollars a year. Billions of dollars a year. Sorry, both of us here can't speak today.
Yeah, I know what's going on.
Yeah, a year on lost luggage. So, you know, you have, like, when we fly, like, it's insured by a certain amount. You have that option to insure, like, your luggage, and then... If the airline loses it, they reimburse you X amount of dollars. Mm-hmm. And so lost luggage happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. So they just hold it in like some kind
of they hold it in a facility, yeah, in a warehouse for months. You know, I think I want to say 30 or 60 days is something after they've tried to find who has it. And then once that's done, then they auction it off like how storage units mm-hmm. get sold. But one person started that and it all goes to him, his company. And
whoa.
So, yes. And then he turns around and then resells it.
What a smart.
I know.
Does he sell it like those storage
constant
containers?
Supply.
No. You can go shop it. So there's I forget where the store is
so
at.
Weird. Yeah.
So maybe Doug can look up luggage resell business.
So it's a store?
It's this one store.
It's all clothes and vibrators. What else is there going to be in there?
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of, it's unseen. Like he pays by the weight, right? Like, you know, 4,000 pounds of, luggage costs X amount of dollars and you just buy, just like storage units, right? They don't get to see what's inside of it. You bid on it and that's what you get it for. Yeah. But I mean, he's not bidding against anybody. So, I mean, he's negotiated his prices and his deals. And this has been going on since, like, I want to say late 60s or early 70s.
I wonder how many drugs they find.
So, okay, that gets turned over. So they talked
about... So they take the narcotics.
Anything illegal that gets found like that or
nobody's skimming off those, huh?
Yeah.
Well, we found traces of cocaine.
Yeah.
Because we spilled it.
Yeah.
We spilled it.
We found a half kilo in there.
Yeah.
What's all over your shirt?
Yeah. Oh, so
nothing.
Look at the nation's only retailer of lost luggage, dude.
How weird.
I know. Where is it located? It's like in the middle America somewhere.
I'd love to go shopping there.
I know.
You know what I'm saying?
That's weird.
Yeah.
Alabama.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, he's probably killing it.
Mm. Of course. If you have a monopoly.
How does he monopolize? Hold on a second. Monopolies don't exist unless there's laws that say that other companies can't do this. So I'm assuming that the airlines have made an exclusive deal with him.
Right.
And no other. Okay.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
In contract. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, I think it's crazy.
Did I ever tell you about the time that my mom almost beat me in the at the airport? This reminds me of that.
Yeah. Beat you in the airport.
I almost got a beat down in the airport.
With her shoe?
Yeah, I almost got hit with the shoe. We were leaving Italy, and I was 12. And when I was in Italy with my cousin, we bought these cap guns that were made out of metal.
Oh, no.
This is before...
Oh, my God. Running around an airport with cap guns?
Hold on a second.
Man.
Imagine today...
That's what I'm trying to explain. So people don't understand this. In the mid 90s, you know, you were a kid, you could buy a toy gun that looked like a gun and was metal. Like it was literally felt and looked like a gun, right? Now the only thing that made it maybe you think it was not a gun would maybe be a little orange like tip thing.
That did not come until we got older.
Well,
as a kid, ours did not have the yellow tip.
Neither did mine. So sometimes they did. but mine didn't.
Yeah, not or you take it off. Which
no,
is what
that
I did.
Did not come. That did not. You guys don't remember. I remember when that happened. When I was playing guns, when I was real little, none of them had that. Mm. As I started to get older, that was like. And I remember being a kid.
Maybe they gave you a real gun to play with when you were
that's stupid.
Like, this is no. Stupid. Why is
you
it
remember
orange?
That, Doug? You remember that, right?
Yeah, I know. I remember that.
Yeah, it was. We did not have the orange tip. That was a law that was passed. I want to say in the 90s.
Late 90s, maybe?
Yeah, when that happened.
So it was a metal cap gun that looked just like a revolver, and I packed it in my suitcase. And this is the first time I ever packed my own luggage. You know, my mom's like, pack your own luggage.
How have I not heard this story before?
Bro, it goes through, and the thing goes off, and the security over there is like, you know, around my parents. And my mom's like, what? And they're like, what do you have in your luggage? And she's like, clothes? I don't know, nothing. And I think my parents, I'm going to call them out. I think my parents thought for a second that they were going to get in trouble for smuggling like salamis and shit. Because you
importing
you're not supposed to do that, right? But I think they had like cheeses and salamis and stuff. So I could tell like the panic, you know, on their face. Like,
sweating.
Like, oh, fuck, they caught us, you know. Yeah. And then they pulled out my cap gun, and the look my mom gave me, I was like, oh, thank you, God, for putting me in public right now. If I was not in public, this would be bad right now.
That's hilarious. I remember vividly, too, like they used to have all those signs of like what was not acceptable to bring in. Yeah. And they had like, of course, the guns, like knives, but then there was like hammers, and there was a fucking chainsaw. Like somebody, like I'm like, a chainsaw? Like, you know, somebody had to have gone through there with a chainsaw for them to even put them on there. Yep. You know, it's so crazy, dude. That's so funny. You know what else was, I was thinking about? I was driving back from Truckee when we were coming back from the house, and I was in traffic, and I was like, what? Okay. There was all these people like taking the turn to get off at this one place where there was fields of these sunflowers. I have never seen like hundreds of people at once taking selfies in front of these sunflowers. I was like, is this a thing? Is this a new thing? Like people like it was like a status thing or all of a sudden.
But the selfie thing's kind of weird when you think about it, right?
Like, it's extremely
does anybody
weird.
Put, do you does anybody put pictures
I've never
of
seen that before, dude. I was just like amazed at how many people were
well,
doing
that's
it.
Like the ice cream business thing that I brought up in San Francisco, the ice cream museum. Like it was literally built
for selfies.
For selfies. That's the reason why, and it blew up because of that.
That's so weird.
Yeah, 100%. 1992.
See that? It came out with the orange gun.
The orange gun did not come out until 1992.
So when were you playing with guns? How old were you?
You mean at 92 for to remember that? I was 81, so 12, 11. Nice try.
I'm not trying to
be like you. He was 18. He's like, oh, so you were 18 when you were still playing with toy guns at him? You remember that?
You didn't get me this time.
Yeah. Nice try, guy. I was like 11. Okay. I was 11. I remember that transition because it was cool in, you know, 90, but it was not so cool in 90. I remember being pissed.
Yeah.
I remember this is stupid. That was half of the fun. Was that it? Felt
bro,
real.
You guys, even when the airsoft guns came out, like the first round of them, they didn't have the distinction that they were like airsoft guns. They looked like legit, like assault rifles and sniper rifles.
My cousin had a machine gun cap gun, and it literally was a machine gun cap gun. And it looked like a machine
gun. That's
crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So cool.
This quaz brought to you by Organifi. For those days you fall short on getting your organic veggies or whole food nutrition, Organifi fills the gap with laboratory-tested, certified organic superfoods to help give your health and performance the added edge. Try Organifi totally risk-free for 60 days by going to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com. And use the coupon code MINDPUMP for 20% off at checkout.
First question is from Acorn Bluth. Why do I suck at pull-ups?
So does Justin. Ask him.
Hey, man.
No, he's pretty good.
I'm all right.
I do suck at pull-ups.
We should talk about ways to get better at pull-ups. This is a very common.
Very common.
Yeah, people are always asking me, how do I get better? They are
pull-ups
very hard.
Pull-ups are hard.
You obviously need to be really strong, but you need to have good strength to weight ratio. This is important because you could be really strong, but you could also weigh 240 pounds, and it's going to be much more difficult than, you know, even if you're not as strong, but you weigh 150 pounds. Is that strength to weight ratio
thing?
This
is why it was so impressive. Do you guys remember Robert Oberst doing pull-ups? He did like four in a row or something. Yeah. I was just, my head almost exploded.
Yeah, because that's a big dude.
He's huge.
Yeah. So some of the best ways you can get strong at pull-ups. Number one, this is one of the best techniques you could do to improving your pull-ups. let's say you could do, you know, a couple. You want to get better at them, but you're only good enough to get, you know, or strong enough to get two. Every day throughout the day, maybe three times a day, just do one. Do one pull-up. Walk by a pull-up bar, do one pull-up bar, and one pull-up, and then go about your day, and then maybe later in the day, do the same thing.
Yeah.
Practice the skill of doing a pull-up. And by the way, when you're practicing the skill, that does not mean you're treating it like a workout necessarily. You're not, you know, trying to get a workout with the pull-up. You're just practicing the pull-up every once in a while or every time you pass by the pull-up bar. I had a female client years ago who, this was her goal. Her goal was to be able to do 6 pull-ups. This was like a big thing for her. And this is what I did. I said, okay, put up a pull-up bar in your house, in your bedroom, in the door frame or whatever. And every time you walk by the door, just do one. Just jump up, do one pull-up and leave. Within a matter of, I think it was a very short period of time, like, within a matter of like 2 months, she went from being able to do 3 pull-ups to being able to do 6 pull-ups in a 2-month period.
It's such an effective strategy. And this is what I know you brought this example up of somebody else, but I still use this same technique for benching. And I would just come in and I would bench and I would do one rep and then I would put it back and just get my body acclimated to the amount of weight and the load. And it's great because you're not under any fatigue. Like my body, I'm just literally working on the strength and the recruitment of it and teaching my body, you know, how much force output to provide. And, you know, we get to the endurance part later. So you want to do multiple reps, you know, that comes after you establish what kind of strength requirement your body needs to be able to pull this off.
Well, to that point, have you guys, this is less less convenient for somebody who's in a gym, but more convenient for somebody who has a home gym. Have you ever gone over and pulled 400 or 500 pounds for a single 2 or 3 times? You know, like do one single rest, do another single rest, and then go over and go do pull up.
Oh yeah,
oh man,
you fly up the bar.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like priming your CNS.
Oh yeah. If you can deadlift, you know, more than you weigh, especially if you can do it significantly more, you know, 300, 400, 500 pounds, and do a couple sets of singles. You know, don't try to go to fatigue or go to maxing out, but go to a heavy load, 80% plus of your max, and do some singles. A couple times, and then go over and do pull-ups,
mm-hmm.
and you just fly up the bar.
Yep.
So that's to that kind of point. And then the other thing that I made the mistake early on when I was a trainer trying to get good at pull-ups, and my strategy was, you know, before the workout, I'd start off with as many as I could get. You know, it was like, and back when I very, very first started, it was like 7. You know, it was hard. And, you know, then I'd get up to 8, then I get to 9, then I get to 10. I kept doing that and eventually to where I think the most I ever got was 20-something pull-ups, around 25, I think, is about where I maxed out for the total amount that I could ever do in a row. And that took a long time to get there. It wasn't until way later did I ever mess with loading my pull-up really heavy and just doing 1 or 2. And I actually shot up way faster doing that and got way stronger doing pull-ups by doing singles, doubles, and triples of really as heavy as I could to only get out a couple than I was by just trying to add a rep or two to it. That was a much better strategy for getting good at pull-ups than just doing reps.
Some other things you can do, let's say that even doing one pull-up is difficult for you, use a resistance band, tie it around the pull-up bar so that it hangs down. Stick your foot in it or your knee in it, depending on how long the band is. So now it's kind of partially supporting your weight.
Or bring it over the J hooks and put it low enough to where you can set it up that way.
That's how I like to do it usually. But this way isn't just if you have a pull up bar, right? Put it on the bar, step in it. Now it's assisting you. Now you could do assisted pull ups. Here's the other way: you could literally get a box or something, a step ladder or something like that. Get up to the pull up bar so that it looks like you finished the pull up. Hold on to the bar. And then lower your body weight down slowly and just practice that.
Do some negatives.
Practice negatives. But frequent practice at sub-max intensity will get you there faster than just doing hard pull-ups, you know, once a week.
Next question is from Lamar Second. I think training biceps is the most boring thing to do in the gym.
Amen, brother.
It's Justin for sure.
Do you have any advice on how to keep bicep training fun and interesting?
I cannot relate to this.
Yeah, I know.
I cannot relate to this at all.
I have no tips because I'm still with this guy.
Never skipped bicep. So here's something for you, okay? You don't like bicep training. It's boring. I get what you're talking about. Bicep training, it's a lot of isolation, single joint movements. You sound like somebody who enjoys doing the challenging functional movements or the big compound lifts. Mm-hmm. Here's the truth, okay? If you're doing heavy pulls, heavy cleans, heavy rows, heavy pull-ups.
You really don't need much of it.
Yeah, you don't need to do too much, you know, bicep work. You really don't. I mean,
just sprinkle it in there.
Yeah, heavy high pulls. Like, in the program we have on sale this month is MAP Strong, right? It's half off. In that program, there's a snatch grip high pull. That'll hammer your biceps. That's going to give you great results for your biceps. In fact, as a kid, I noticed my biceps got better results from doing movements like that than from doing the curls and all the isolation exercises. So that's one thing you could do is you don't necessarily need to do specific bicep work. Just throw in more heavy pulling work. Here's the other thing you can do, okay? Have some fun doing heavy strength training with biceps. Now, I don't recommend this to everybody, but you can do this if you're bored. A hammer curl is a great exercise you could do with one arm where you're kind of practicing, no joke, singles and doubles. You know, arm wrestlers do this. This is a favorite exercise among arm wrestlers where they'll grab a heavy dumbbell and they'll do one heavy curl and let it go down real slow and they'll practice doing singles like they're practicing a deadlift or a squat. That stuff is a lot of fun.
You do not, I was joking that I can't relate or answer for you, but you do not need to do bicep curls. If you are somebody who, if you are doing pull-ups and you're deadlifting, you're doing snatch, I mean, if you're doing all those exercises,
and supinated rows,
them biceps are getting worked. They are not getting neglected whatsoever. Now, if you said to me, Adam, I want better biceps and you don't like your bicep development, and then you're also asking, I hate training them. Okay, well, that's a different conversation. But if you're doing bicep curls just because you think that you need to do bicep curls, or maybe you're following even one of our programs and it has bicep curls in it, but you're doing everything else, you don't have to. That's another thing too. It's like when we talk, like the programs since day one, right, when we created them, were with the intent to mold them to you, right? Like it's, the idea was to give people a very solid blueprint that if you followed it to a T, you're fine, you're set. But if you have things that are, that you care about or you don't care about, to customize. So, you know, if you were following a program like MAPS Aesthetic or MAPS Anabolic and where there's bicep curls in there and you're already doing a lot of pull-ups, deadlifting, and you'd rather do maybe abs inserted in there instead, or do another set of getting better at perfecting your squat, or doing some more prime mobility work because you know you need that, adding carries in there because that's not an anabolic. I mean, shit, do it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Do it. Don't stress having to do bicep curls. That's not a necessary thing to do. If you are doing good back exercises, buys are getting a good workout.
Well, we never really talk about some of these unconventional lifts because it's very, you're not going to find them in the gym. Like it's something that's like not commonly like seen, and that's with working with ropes. And so I've done rope climbs, and I've also done rope pulls where I'm in a seated position and I'm pulling the rope, and I'm doing that over like, you know, a certain amount of time. And man, if you want to talk about like frying your arms and your biceps and your grip and everything else, it's a really challenging exercise and a lot of fun too. So I mean, there's ways you can get creative with this. So I tend to be the one that gets most creative because I hate bicep curls. I think it's fucking it's boring and it's it's a slow death for me. But there's lots of ways around it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So here's your evidence. If you think, oh man, you know, it's boring, but I have to do it. But I do lots of heavy pull-ups and pulls and stuff like that. Like, what's gonna happen? The athletes with the best biceps you'll ever find anywhere, besides
gymnasts.
Yeah. Besides bodybuilders and people lift weights, gymnasts.
And they don't ever do a bicep curl.
No, look at a male gymnast's arms and bicep. Now, I know there's a bit of a bias because they're probably genetically gifted. Doesn't matter, though. You could tell their biceps are way more developed than any other athletes because of all the pull-ups and ring work that they do.
Oh, yeah.
They don't do curls. I mean, I know gymnasts that some of them do some curls here and there, but that's not a staple.
No, muscles are in such a state of tension trying to keep stability that the contraction there in all those muscles that it requires is insane.
Most insane biceps I've ever seen in my life was a trainer that worked for me who had done was a gymnast for years and years and years. He had the most insane looking arms, and I remember asking him, like, you know, how often do you do curls? Like, what's the deal? And he goes, I rarely ever do them. I actually don't do them that often. But he did pull-ups all the time.
You're right.
Next question is from Emoy5. What are some of the best workout tips for using resistance bands?
Don't allow the bands to sit in the sun and dry out.
Mm, ooh, what happened to you?
That's a good one.
Did they snap on you or what?
I think everybody's had a band snap on them.
Or don't let your trainer put it around you and then have you run with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that always ends in
Have you guys ever smacked a client with the broken band?
Yes.
Oh,
of course. God, it came back, actually. I was doing that as a trainer, and it broke, but it got me. So it came back and it hit me in the ribs. I had like the biggest welt and bruise for a couple weeks.
Dude, I hit one of my older male clients right in the pills.
Oh,
yeah, right in the pills, hard.
Last time he resigned.
Poor guy.
No. He stopped after that. So it's funny. The funny thing about resistance bands, this is very interesting. You know, we have a bit of a unique perspective because we've been in the fitness space professionally, in the gym space for two decades or over two decades, right? So you see trends and what becomes favorable and unfavorable. And I can't think of another tool that went from nobody respected at all to becoming extremely valuable in a relatively short period of time. When I first started working out, you wouldn't catch a single lifter using bands. If they did, they would be made fun of for the rest of your lives.
Was it Westside Barbell that popularized
them? Powerlifting coaches were the ones that started popularizing bands because, well, what happened was a lot of these coaches were studying the lifting techniques and workout programs of Eastern Bloc lifters, former Soviet Union nations. And remember, when the Iron Curtain came down, all of their information became available to us. And these countries had like funding, massive funding from their communist regime because it was a source of pride, right? That their athletes, you know, did stuff. So they studied all kinds of different lifting techniques. And one thing that they discovered was variable resistance was extremely effective at building strength. Very, very effective at building strength.
Because it mimics the strength curve.
It mimics the strength curve. So what I'm talking about is, and our coaches over here saw this, read this, and the smart ones applied it, and then, you know, they became dominant. So a strength curve is this, right? When you're doing a squat, for example, you're not the same strength throughout the whole squat. Most of us are strongest at the top of the squat and weakest at the bottom of a squat. So imagine when you're doing a heavy squat, where are you most likely to not be able to lift the weight? Where are you most likely to be able to lift the most amount of weight, right? At the top, you're the strongest. At the bottom, you're the weakest. Now, the problem with free weights or most machines or any other piece of equipment is that the resistance is pretty consistent. So if I'm squatting 300 pounds, whether I'm at the top of the squat or the bottom of the squat, it's 300 pounds. What a band does when I attach bands to the side of the bar and attach them down to an anchor. So let's say I tie them to the squat rack at the bottom, up at the, so they're on the barbell and they're at the bottom of the squat rack. What a band does is it gives you more resistance at the top and less resistance at the bottom. Because when you have a band, the further you stretch it out, the harder the resistance becomes. And the when it's barely stretched out, the resistance is very easy. So when you're squatting with bands, now you have 300 pounds on the bar, but you have, let's say, an additional 100 pounds of resistance at the top of the squat, but at the bottom, it's only maybe 20 pounds of resistance.
And it gradually increases, so it's not like a huge demand all at once.
No, and this resistance trains your muscles through their natural strength curve, and it's incredible for strength gains. That's my second favorite way to use resistance bands. My first favorite way is with a trigger session. Trigger sessions work better with bands than they do with weights. I think it's because bands don't cause as much damage to muscle.
Mm-hmm.
In a trigger session, you'll find that in MAPS Anabolic. But for those of you who don't have the program, here's how you can apply a trigger session. Get yourself a pair of bands. On your days off, do light exercises and movements for about 10 minutes, two or three times during the day, for maybe three or four of your target body parts. So let's say it's your shoulders, your triceps, your biceps, and your back. So you're going to do band exercises for each of those, get a little bit of a pump, and just send a small muscle building signal. But really what you're doing is you're facilitating recovery, improving mobility, improving blood flow, and it turbocharges the results you get from your workout. That's my favorite way to use it.
Speaking of, Doug, are we sold out still? Do you know?
I don't know.
I haven't seen a box come through in a while from our bands. Do we have them? I haven't seen this come through.
As soon as we list them, they're gone.
No, I know. It's been crazy right now. My favorite part about resistance band is just the convenience of them. Mm-hmm. You know, anybody who's been training in a gym long enough knows that, like, when you're inside of a gym, one of the most versatile machines out there are the cable machines. You know, because you can move the anchoring point and you can move your contours to your body. And so you could do all these great, you could do a full body extra routine with one cable machine, like, or a free motion machine really well. Good bands are the same way, mm-hmm. especially if you have, I mean, the ones that we sell have like the different anchor points that I could put at the bottom of a door, the side of a door, the top of the door. And so I can create all kinds of different angles and I could do a full body routine and I could carry it around in this little pouch. So I love it for that. Like, of course, what Sal's saying for my advanced lifters or listeners, I think bands and chains are great tools to break through plateaus and to improve strength gains. But for the masses and for most people, I just think it's one of those things that you should have. Like, everybody should just have a set of, like, good band, like a basic set of bands for that time that you're going to work out inside a hotel, or that time you're going to be at a park, or that time that you're just going to, you want to get a little bit of exercise in, and you can get a really nice workout.
Yeah, I really got into bands. I was thinking back when I was in college, and there was a physical therapy a clinic, like, on site, and you know, after workouts, I would kind of go in there and discuss things with them, and they would work all with rubber bands. They would treat everybody with rubber bands. They were fantastic for rehabilitation, you know, exercises. And that's when I started actually using them a lot more and started to actually superset them, you know, in combo with dumbbells or barbells. And I saw some pretty awesome gains as a result.
Yeah, I love bands. I discovered them not that long ago. Maybe, you know, I want to say 8 years ago. It's actually a long time ago, but, you know, I've been working out for so long. It seems like it was recent, and ever since I discovered them, they were game changing. Adam, do you remember one of the first, maybe the first workout you and I ever had together? Do you remember you came to my studio, my wellness facility, and you and I did a deadlift?
Yeah,
workout
together.
Don't
get this wrong, so I will be crushed.
Yeah, no, I have video of that.
Yeah, oh, you do?
Yeah. We
don't anchor. Show me because we were all jacked.
I know. I think I was like, we were banded up on like 315, and I was pulling it like it was butter.
Yeah. So what I was going to say is, here's another. This is an advanced tip. So if you're a beginner, intermediate, this probably won't benefit you. But if you're an advanced lifter, this is brilliant. Another good thing about the band is I can change where it's pulling from to emphasize different angles of a lift. So I'll give you an example. So Adam and I, we were doing deadlifts that day together. Now, one of the things about a deadlift is you want to be able to pull back. You want to create the force that you're trying to create with the deadlift is not just to lift the weight up, but rather to kind of lift it back at the same time.
Lock out.
To lock it out. So what we did is we attached the bands to the bar in front of us on the cage. That way we have to really emphasize that pullback at the top. You do a few sets of that and then take the bands off. Watch your form. It primes that movement and gives you better technique with your lift. You could do this with a lot of different exercises.
Right. All right. Next question is from Captain Tanya BC. What are your suggestions for building bone health and strength? What do you suggest for people with osteopenia who are progressing towards osteoporosis? I know resistance training is great for this, but is there a certain way to approach it when you've got one or both of these?
You probably dealt with this a lot, Sal.
I did. Mm-hmm. I actually, one client in particular, I trained quite a few clients in osteopenia and osteoporosis towards the end of my career. I had a lot of doctor clients, and then they would refer patients to me. One lady that I trained, she had osteopenia, and she was on treatments for it. They would give her you know, very, very harsh medication to try and reverse this because her bone loss was happening pretty quickly. Now, the thing was, she was already active. She did lots of walking, and she ate a pretty healthy diet. She did not lift weights, though. So she hires me because someone tells her that lifting weights will help build bone. And we did. We started lifting weights, and her doctor would annually, you know, or biannually measure her bone density. They were so blown away by the not only just stopping the bone loss, but actually the reversal of it. They were so blown away by it that the doctor actually did a case study on her and had me write some stuff that he could, you know, present. I don't remember where he was presenting it, but as, you know, basically to say that resistance training was just remarkably effective.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing about lifting weights or just resistance training in particular. You know, we think of it as building muscle. It's a bone builder, mm-hmm. just as much as it's a muscle builder.
Yeah.
Just as much.
I remember this when Dr. Spina kind of has this whole like presentation about how each one of these tissues, whether it's ligaments, whether it's you know, muscle tissue, whether it's bone, they all interact with each other, and force is the communication between it all. So it's really applying the right amount that affects the, you know, all these tissues together.
Yes. So because muscle anchors on bone, as muscle strengthens and pulls harder, bone just strengthens. Nothing is more effective than resistance training for strengthening bone. If you have osteopenia, osteoporosis, there isn't a single thing you can do that will help you more effectively, that's natural, than resistance training. In fact, I don't think there's any medication that will even come close as well. Now, the question is, how do I do this? Heavy weight training is the best way. Now, it has to be appropriate. Right. So good form.
Right. Heavy for a 70-year-old. You got to keep that in mind. Like, people hear heavy and they think, oh, okay.
No, it's all relative.
Right.
Yeah. It's all relative. So, in other words, you need to do traditional strength training, not circuits, not HIIT training, not anything like that, but like 7-8 reps of a squat or a deadlift.
Proper rest periods, yeah, for recovery.
Yes. Now, the best exercises for this, all resistance training exercises are good, but the best ones are the ones that load the entire body and the spine. Barbell squat, barbell deadlift, overhead press.
You know what I think of? Carries.
Carries are really good.
Carries
too.
For someone like this, I think, is just tremendous. Mm-hmm. I mean, walking is such a fundamental thing we should be doing anyways. It's an easy thing to progressively overload with a client that's advanced age. It's like, I could start her off with just carrying 20-pound dumbbells in her hand, and that could be a load for her that she's not used to, and then slowly work up to a trap bar and adding weight to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things I've always loved about the carries when we got into them, was that you just feel that from the neck down. And that what that is, the reason why the bones are growing, it's an adaptation response to the stress. You're getting, the bones are being stressed that you're carrying a heavy load. So they're going to get thicker and more dense to support that. And so doing exercises that are loading the body, and like to your point, mm-hmm. That are from head to toe. And I think farmer carries is a must inside there. And it's teaching a 70-year-old how to perform a squat if they've never learned how to do it could be really difficult.
Well,
right?
I'll tell you about this lady, right? So she was in her late 60s, never had resistance trained before, and you always want to train appropriate. Okay, so again, it's all relative. But when we started, literally the lower body exercise we started with, I would have her hold on to the squat rack with one hand, get into a split stance like she's doing a lunge. I put a pad underneath her. She would kneel down on the pad and then stand back up. So it's like a modified lunge. And I wouldn't have her do very many. She wasn't very strong when we started. By the end of, I want to say, a year and a half of training, she was doing barbell squats with a 30-pound barbell on her back. So not a lot, but way better. I mean, way stronger than she was before. She was deadlifting 90 pounds, which
really
is
good.
Significant, right, off the ground. She was a small, petite lady, too. Overhead pressing the 12-pound dumbbells. We were bench pressing with a 30-pound barbell. We were barbell rowing with, I think, 30 pounds, something like that. So we had progressed to all these movements. She had gotten strong with them. And again, the doctor was so shocked, because there's a point when you get into when osteopenia becomes osteoporosis, and the best that they can hope for is like stopping it. Yeah. This is what they kind of like,
slowing it down.
She not only did she stop it, she started reversing to the point where we were getting to the point where the doctor was almost going to take her off that classification and say, you no longer have, and that's apparently a tough thing or rare thing for them to see.
Now, what medication would they prescribe? Say you're in that situation.
I think she was on Fosamax, I want to say. I think that's the name.
God, how do you remember that?
Yeah, I don't know.
God, you're such a dork. That's why I asked, because I figured you'd know that.
It's like, and I train those clients too. Maybe not as many as you did, but gee, the fact that you would remember the medication that they take.
Yeah, right. that is what it was. It was Fosamax.
It's a stupid gift.
Yeah, and the side effects are, I mean, they get a lot of side effects from it and stuff, which
superpower.
Is superpower. Yeah, it which is stop.
It is.
Which is super. Here's the other thing with the
fucking medication.
Remember, stop.
I can't even remember the medication I had to take.
that you take every day.
Yeah. I always take less than I should.
You know what I mean? But here's the other thing. Let's talk about diet for a second. So long as you don't have any nutrient deficiencies, because I guarantee if you have osteopenia, I'm sure they're checking your vitamin D levels. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're checking your calcium levels. If all of your nutrients, your micronutrients are okay, then what you want to do is you want to eat a diet that's best for building muscle. Okay. So I know a high protein diet, for example, has not been shown in literature to build bone or strengthen bone. Mm-hmm. That's not the point. What we want to do is we want to feed the body that gets the, in a way that builds the most strength in the muscle, because it's the pulling of the muscle that anchors on the bone that causes the bone to get. So I had her eat. She was eating, and this she was a she did not like meat when we first started training, but over time she started to appreciate it. I had her eating about 0.8 grams of protein per pound of body weight. She was eating a traditional muscle building diet. I feel like that was a big part
of it.
That's
such a good point. Yeah. This is another example of like when science misses the mark, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're studying, when we tend to isolate things like bone, right? And be like, oh, if you increase your protein 1 to 1 gram, it doesn't do anything for the bones.
No.
But you can't factor in that, or you're not factoring in that person also ended up building 5 or 10 more pounds of muscle, which building 10 more pounds of muscle did actually respond.
Yes, because muscles are the ones that are lifting the weights, and the more weight you can lift, the more the bone needs to adapt to support that. So you want to eat a diet that makes your muscles as strong as possible if you want to strengthen your bone. And that's just like the diet we always talk about, which is a high protein diet balanced with carbs and with fats. Look, Mind Pump is recorded on video as well as audio. What's up, everybody on YouTube? Go to Mind Pump Podcast. Come check us out. You can also find us on Instagram. If you're not following us on Instagram, you probably shouldn't even be on there. Wasting your time.
Yeah, why?
Justin is at Mind Pump Justin. I'm at Mind Pump Sal. And Adam is at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.